Tonight, the return to the classroom potentially dangerous.
The divide is very sharp.
You are abusing our children.
Parental backlash.
You know, we are parents, ordinary parents, who became accidental activists.
Latest political front line, school boards.
With families at odds over how to keep their kids safe.
Now another cause for worry has surfaced, a teacher shortage in virtually every region of the country.
If we don't learn our lesson, we will be held back.
It's been brutal.
I'm Annie Reese. This is Politico Dispatch. And today...
Oof, you're going to get me in trouble here.
Politico education reporter Juan Perez attempts to give 2021 a grade.
C, C plus, C minus.
Room for improvement?
Definitely room for improvement. It's amazing what's been accomplished despite all of the difficulties that schools have faced in a second consecutive year of COVID, right? But it's clear that across the country, there are still a lot of concerns out there.
So I called Juan up to talk about those concerns and the biggest top lines in education news this year and the fights that are yet to come.
If I talk to administrators, teachers, students, parents, universally, there's been just an enormous number of challenges and stressors and unexpected wrinkles and problems that have bubbled up throughout the course of the year. That's not to say it's been an utter failure. In fact, there's been an enormous amount of ingenuity and creativity and straight up hard work on behalf of everybody to try to make this into something that works, I guess. But it clearly hasn't been perfect. I think there's a number of issues that we can point to. First, the transition from a predominantly remote learning environment where kids were stuck in front of screens into the normal, regular classroom environment, I think in some cases has been turbulent. And that has to do with the fact that, well, for starters, the virus is still out there. Kids can get sick. Kids can spread this disease. And in places that aren't implementing mitigation measures, protective measures like masks, for example, ventilation, testing, social distancing, there are schools that are having problems with the virus, for starters. And then there's been a difficult, I think, transition for kids to get kind of caught back up after months and months of missed classroom instruction. Mm-hmm. So it's not just walking back into the schoolhouse. It's not so easy that you just walk in the door and everything comes back to normal. No, in fact, there's making up to do. And there's been, there was frankly a debate as to whether to call it lost learning or something else. But it's clear that there's been academic impacts here. There's been mental health impacts on students as well. We can't dispute that. This has been tremendously challenging for adolescents, for children, and for their parents and families as they've gone through economic hardship. And those issues get brought back into schools when people come back into in-person environments.
Yeah.
We're in this kind of new frontier of learning, and I don't think anybody can really say for sure what the future holds or what it's going to look like.
Well, and this is something that people are really fired up about on sort of every side, right? You know, you've been writing a lot recently about how education is going to be a major part of the 2022 midterms. And you wrote that essentially, quote, the race is on for control of the nation's schools.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that, how we're seeing that play out politically.
So we know, you know, it's obvious, 2022's midterms carry huge implications for politics and policy, the control of the nation, not just schools here. That's a fact. But we shouldn't overlook the fact that next year's midterm season is going to include some campaigns for state school board seats and for elected superintendents in more than a dozen areas. There are scores of gubernatorial and legislative elections out there. Those races are going to take on, I think, a tremendous amount of added importance for teachers and students because governors and legislatures, as you know, are passing laws that in some cases, let's say, carry restrictions on the kinds of safety measures that schools can employ when it comes to masks and vaccines, for example. There's a heated debate over the role of race in curriculum and literally what schools should decide. And governors and legislatures set out that policy through, you know, their actions, and then the state school board and elected superintendents are responsible for carrying out that policy. I think it's critical to state that these people play a pretty critical role in establishing policies and overseeing stuff that affects the everyday classroom issues that we were just talking about, like academic testing, teacher certification, education budgets.
Yeah.
All of these people now are standing at the front line of, I don't know how else to put it, an array of political flashpoints. And that includes a lot of fired up parents. Those voters could very well play a very key role here, especially if they're fired up about school safety or how to teach history. Or, I think perhaps most importantly, the role that their own voices, the role that parents' voices play in shaping the debate and decisions at schools.
A useful example to kind of drill down is the Virginia gubernatorial election between Governor-elect Glenn Youngkin and Terry McAuliffe,
mm-hmm.
where we saw so many of these things coming to play, right? I mean, it was almost solely education-focused race. Do you think that many campaigns next year will be using the Virginia election as something of a playbook?
I think the governor-elect certainly seems to think that they should. And I think it's highly probable that in a lot of areas, you will in fact see that. Let's turn back to Youngkin just for a moment here. The governor-elect talked about how polling kept telling his campaign that education was, you know, kind of lower on the list of important issues. But I think there's sufficient evidence to show that, in fact, it was very important for a certain subset of voters, and so important for a subset of voters that it actually drove them to the polls en masse. So here's some, I think, more granular examples we can point to here. The organization Democrats for Education Reform commissioned some polling recently to kind of break some of this down. And part of what they found was that of the voters who ranked education as a top issue in Virginia's gubernatorial race, of that smaller group of voters who ranked education as the number one issue, 70% of those voters voted for Governor-elect Youngkin. Think about that. Traditionally, Democrats have been seen as kind of the party of education, at least in more recent years. But these sorts of numbers, I think, to, you know, the Democrats for Education Reform group and just the party in general, kind of underscore not only how Democrats have sort of lost ground to Republicans, but how these school-related concerns that we're talking about here drove, pushed conservative voters to Virginia polls. Nearly two-thirds of voters who ranked education as their top issue, they were Republicans. And education ranked highest for voters who did not vote in 2017. So if you're looking to tap a concerned and easily mobilized group of voters out there to kind of boost your numbers at the polls, this is one place to look. And
wow.
The question is whether, to me, whether Democrats can find a way to sort of establish an identity and take back sort of the conversation, so to speak, when it comes to this thing. That's an open question. I don't know how that's going to work out.
In terms of these education-focused races, in a purely political sense, do you get the sense that Democrats or Republicans have more of an edge right now, or have a message that seems to be resonating more with voters?
I think it's clear that Republicans have put Democrats on their back foot, at least right now. And if we're looking at Virginia and if we're looking at the broader rhetoric out there, that kind of makes sense. Remember, it was conservatives, first led by former President Donald Trump and his messaging apparatus, that have not only started this debate over critical race theory and concern over mask mandates and these sorts of things, but they've simply, in my view, dominated the outrage game on this issue. So it's clear that Republicans have an advantage here. Now it's a question of whether the pendulum can kind of swing the other way here. I think the right kind of candidate with the right kind of messaging can find a way to cut through this debate in a general election. And I think there's a way for moderates to take advantage of this. The question, though, is whether the partisan fervor tips so strongly in favor of Republicans that Democrats simply get pushed into this defensive crouch and fail to establish their own message and their own identity on this. That's going to be a real test. I think it's fair to say that, like, schools have always been kind of political. you know, but they've been politicized on kind of a local level, right? It's never been a situation where schools are so deeply entrenched in the culture wars on a national, massive scale during an election season in an era quite like this one in contemporary politics in America. Okay, I think we're in a unique moment here.
Looking ahead to next year, what's on your syllabus?
Well, that'll take a while.
What are the biggest education stories that you're going to be following?
There's a big list, but just thinking off the top of my head, there's a lot of races to watch out there and all sorts of different messaging that's going to get deployed. And depending on how candidates and strategists sort of craft the pitch, so to speak, it's going to be really interesting to watch, especially in some of these important states that are central to kind of Democrat strategies for not just 2022, but beyond. So let's put that at the top of the list. We can't, however, ignore the virus. There's a lot we don't know about this recently discovered variant. As we record this today, you know, there's still a lot of answers that we're looking for. But I think what is clear is that this pandemic is not over yet. We can't overlook that. No matter how sick of masks we are, no matter how much we want to get back to our normal lives, it's just not apparent that we're out of the woods yet. And the coming weeks and months could really set the tone for what that looks like, whether there's new guidance coming from the government that kind of further scrambles some of the messaging that people are concerned about, or whether there's new requirements that come through that people get frustrated about. And I think that kind of sort of plays into a related question about school safety, a debate over national security, and just kind of the challenges that are confronting, you know, not just elected officials who oversee schools, but the appointed ones and the civil servants who make this their life's work. I just don't know that we've ever seen so many cultural and political issues curdling inside schoolhouses the way that we're seeing them now.
Juan Perez, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Today's episode included music composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Be sure to subscribe to Politico Dispatch if you haven't yet, and if you can, leave us a rating and review. It helps more people find the show. I'm Annie Reese. Thanks so much for listening.